This is a Pinball News production.
Thanks, everybody, for showing up today. Like you said, my name is Scott Gullicks. This is my rockstar programmer, Frank Gelati. We're going to be talking today about how you can build your own pinball machine. And the intent of my presentation is to kind of take it from the pinball hobby perspective. So, you know, if you have a passion and an interest of trying to design your own game and actually build it, I'm going to try to give you guys the tools that I used to build our first prototype, ways that you can do it cost-effectively where it's not going to break the bank, but still hopefully get you guys an end product that you're really happy about. And in addition to that, I'm going to talk a little bit in the beginning about some of the, I think, the big questions you really want to ask yourself before you start. When I first got into this, I just said, I'm going to do it. And there's a lot of things that come into play that, you know, we'll get into how much time we put into this. But understanding what your guys' goals are and limitations ahead of time will really save you some frustration and down the road. So I guess after the last presentation about a virtual pinball machine going into a real pinball machine, I'll be giving you a talk on a virtual pinball machine going into a real pinball machine. For those of you guys that don't know me, my handle's also T800 on Pinside. My first pinball machine that I really got into was in college, T2. It was also the first pinball machine that I bought when I finally got a house. So I kind of stuck with the T2 theme. And the pinball machine I'm going to be talking about is called Wrath of Olympus. And some of you guys have come by and played it already. We've been developing it probably for about 2 years now. It was first a V-pin for the visual pinball platform. Still a little more information about me. I live in Minnesota, specifically the Twin Cities area. It works really well for me to get out here to Chicago. I have an English Bulldog that's one of my favorite pin helpers. You'll see him in one of the slides. It's good to have a little, in my opinion, a dog to help out when you get frustrated with things. And I'm also married, and I got one kid and another on the way. So balancing the work life and all the details that go into building a pinball machine are something that you really need to take into consideration. The big part of my life, I'm a full-time engineer for 3M as well. My background is in product development, and it's one of the things that gave me a little more confidence in actually starting a real pinball machine. So my background is from concept, ideation, invention, through the design process, scale up, and launch. So I've had a lot of experience in actually designing real parts, going through the manufacturing process, dealing with marketing, and understanding how products are being sold. So it has given me a little edge on being able to, you know, work with a pinball machine, because essentially it's just one big giant electromechanical assembly. I'm also doing contract work for Jerry Stellenberg with his P3 platform, doing the artwork for Cosmic Kart Racing, which is, I think, going to be his second pin, as well as the artwork for Lexi Lightspeed. You may notice a little correlation with some of the Wrath of Olympus artwork. I tend to do a lot of illustration style stuff. So again, before you start building a pinball machine, there's a few things that you need to think about. One, I see you're batshit crazy again. When I started this project, I had no idea how much time, energy, and money I was really going to put into it. And once you start really getting into it and you really want to get a high-quality machine, be prepared to spend a lot of time and money. And in my case, I haven't had to put a whole ton of money in, but the time has been just amazing. It's my wife goes to bed at 10 o'clock, a few hours after my son does, and I'm up until 2 in the morning, 3-4 nights a week working on pinball. And if you've got that passion and you love it, do it, because I don't mind not getting the sleep, but it is a lot of time that you put in. So why did I start this project? And to start, pretty much started this about 3 years ago, and 3 years ago, you could buy a Neuenbox from Stern or a Neuenbox from Stern. There wasn't any other pins you could really buy. Jersey Jack was just starting to come on. And for probably the last 15 years that Stern was doing pinball, there wasn't any hand-drawn artwork. To me, there wasn't quite the same breadth of pinball interest that Williams was doing back in the 90s. So I got into that. And since then, we've got Jersey Jack, we've got Highway Pinball, we've got Skip B, Multimorphic, Planetary Pinball, Spooky Pinball, Dutch Pinball, Vonnie D, Silver Castle, and Riot Pinball, my company. So people like Jerry Stellenberg has done a great job of helping facilitate this through his P-Rock boards. It's just kind of interesting that within 3 years, we've got all these other companies now sprouting up, building their own pinball machines. So again, I kind of want to stress this come to Jesus, so to speak, where, one, what is your end goal of your project? You know, do you want to just have a flipping whitewood, or do you want to have a fully finished production-looking machine? How much money do you want to spend? How much time do you plan on investing? What level of quality? All of these questions, if you have ahead of time, I think it's going to really help you understand how much time you're really going to put in at the end. Because one of the things you'll notice is, you know, you can put just a little bit of money in and you'll get a station wagon. You put a little bit more money in and a little more time and you can get a Ferrari. It's all things you have to consider when you're starting to build your pinball machine. So the other things that you really need to have is the mechanical skills to be able to understand where parts need to go, to be able to find parts online and make sure that they can bolt properly together with your other mechanisms or onto the play field. The electrical skills, luckily there's a lot of forums. My background's primarily mechanical, but there's been a lot of help, especially again with Jerry with the electrical part of things. There's software. Software I have almost no knowledge of. But again, through the forums, you can find a lot of information and meet really great people like Frank here stepped up and volunteered to do my software for the game. And graphic design, that's one of my backgrounds. That's, I think, one of the reasons that my Wrath of Olympus looks so beautiful is that I have that background. And again, just to reiterate, I know nothing about software other than just enough to get things running. But it's networking and finding people like Frank that will fill those gaps that you have and make your project successful. I attended J-Pop's session, and he mentioned, you know, you need a team of 10 to build a pinball machine. Well, you might need a team of 10 to build his pinball machine, but realistically, if you've got the drive and passion and can network, one or two or three guys can, in my opinion, build a pretty nice pinball machine. And as I start getting into some of the details about what I did to build Wrath of Olympus or Wooly, feel free to interrupt me at any time. A lot of the details I've kind of glazed over because there's so many there. I'd rather have you guys ask questions that I can answer and give you advice on moving forward on specific parts of the project. But I think the single most important biggest factor in this is, are you a good problem solver? Because whether you're in mechanical, electrical, or graphic design or software, you're going to have problems that come up. And if you can't solve problems well, building a pinball machine is going to be really hard because there's going to be little things that always come up that you need to tweak. Whether it's this ball isn't flowing very well, I need to adjust this, or this lamp's not working because the lights aren't on. It crosses all the disciplines. So the first thing getting started, for me, it all started with hand sketches. I had a rough idea of what I wanted to lay out, and I must have gone through about 30 or 40 different rough hand sketches of layouts. And to me, that's the fastest way you can kind of get to, okay, this looks fun. But from there, the next way that I thought was the most economical for me personally was to actually do a digital design. So for those of you not familiar with Wrath of Olympus, I actually designed the whole game in Visual Pinball first. And Visual Pinball is this great program that allows you to mimic a lot of the physics that happen in a real pinball machine. So instead of spending a lot of money on different whitewoods or even taking that back level into foam cores where you've got to constantly be moving walls on physical objects and then you still got to have things wired up to get things flipping, you can do that all digitally, and it actually was a really, really close representation of what my first whitewood was. So as far as Visual Pinball goes, it's a very simple program to learn to start. And I said again in the beginning that I don't know anything about software, but I was able to develop a whole table that could flip without any knowledge of software. And from there, again, networking, one of the visual pinball gurus is J.P. Salas. I don't know, does anybody here know visual pinball or use digital pinball? But he's pretty much the god of visual pinball, and he volunteered to code my game with all the rule sets and all the lighting and everything that I wanted for the visual pinball for free. It's just amazing what people in this community are willing to do when they see a cool project and they are passionate about pinball. The other thing that I thought was really cool is I built a visual pinball cabinet before I built Wrath of Olympus. And in that process, you learn a lot about how the hardware works, how the physical building of a cabinet goes, the electrical part. It's a great stepping stone to interfacing computers with hardware. And at the end of the day, you get a really cool cabinet too, and some people like visual pinball, some people don't. So after that, we got such a good response from the visual pinball table that a lot of people said, hey, you know, have you thought about building a real one? And I said, hey, that sounds pretty cool, actually. Let's try it. So my background, again, is in mechanical design. I do a lot of 3D programming. My entire game has been modeled in 3D CAD by myself. I use a really high-end tool called Creo. It's a pro engineer. I also have a software license in SolidWorks. But there are other free tools out there that all of you guys can download and use for free if you want to start developing 3D models for your own pinball machine. So the FreeCAD is a 3D modeler. And then the other thing is a GIMP is a free 2D software package like Photoshop. So a lot of the actual current pinball manufacturers don't even use 3D. Some of them are still stuck in the 2D era. So you can still design and build a pinball machine even with 2D stuff. So using GIMP and creating all your playfield layouts, the holes, the inserts, is another way you can do that. And again, the tools that you're going to want to have at your disposal to actually make these machines, the one that you use the most is probably the grinder on the right. You're always going to be cutting shapes, and they're not going to be quite right, but just using a grinder to grind them down and fine-tune is something I do all the time. The bandsaw, another big tool. The Dremel. I mean, all these tools can pretty much get you where you need to be from a playfield perspective. Cutting holes, routing for inserts, things like that, and two-part epoxies. I guess what I'm trying to stress here is it doesn't take a lot of real fancy equipment to be able to make a pinball machine if it's just going to be like your own hobby pinball machine like we're talking about today. And at the end of the day, too, there's a lot of companies out there that are going to be willing to help you with some of those bigger programs. So are you a carpenter? I'm not really a carpenter. A lot of the pinball cabinets that I built, I purchased directly from Extreme Pinball. Virtua Pin also sells them. They can send you flat packs. They're roughly like $200, maybe $100 for shipping. And they're all routed to size. They're usually matching kind of the old Williams specs. And you can literally glue them in place and then nail them. It's a really easy way to get a really nice quality cabinet without having to cut it yourself. I actually made a few virtual cabinets when I first started, and the first ones I actually cut all by hand. It was a good learning curve, and I found that this was just a much cheaper, faster way to get there. And the other important thing is if you're using GIMP to create artwork, just make sure you're doing it at full size and 300 DPI. I think getting artwork on the game is, to me, the most important part of it other than the shots and the layout. The way pinball machines look is really important. So making sure that you're always working at full-size 300 DPI. And this company, Game On Graphics, is one of my preferred suppliers for getting decals. They do a really great job. The decals are somewhat repositionable, and they're really easy to apply. Now the playfield. The playfield's probably the most important part to really spend a lot of time on, especially when you're starting early. When I first started the Wrath Olympus project, I looked online for a long time to find out how other people were doing their custom jobs. There was one guy that did a custom flash with his own artwork, and getting playfield silkscreened is something that's just not in my budget. The cost of that is outrageous, and you have to have a whole bunch done, so you got to make sure your playfield's perfect before you start. So I kind of took a different approach where I connected with Extreme Pinball again and a company called Bowman Signs, where basically I sent them just a 2D playfield drawing. That happened to be exported out of my 3D, but again, you can use GIMP and basic Photoshop or Illustrator to create these files that they can use to make the CNC'd parts. And basically, what Extreme Pinball did was they took my files and they cut a playfield for me. And I just actually talked to Greg today. His name is Greg Butcher. He works for Extreme Pinball. He loves this stuff and wants anybody that's interested in doing their own custom projects to talk to him, because he'd love to cut your playfield for you. And he did it really reasonable for me. I think it was like $200 and then $50 for shipping to get a playfield cut. But then you have the next question of how the heck do you get artwork on there? And that's where I started working with Bowman Signs. Let me see where I'm at here. So with Bowman Signs, he was able to actually get me a big sticker. The first playfield that we built has nothing more than a giant sticker over the top for graphics. And if you guys saw the game last year at Expo, I think it was about everybody I talked to couldn't tell that it wasn't a real direct print, silk screen, clear-coated playfield. And that process, again, was nothing more than getting a pinball machine routed. We take and mask off where the white areas need to be, spray paint that white, press in our inserts. Every single insert I had, I sanded down from 80 grit up to 5,000 grit to make sure they are smooth and flush and flat. And also there's some injector molding marks on them and numbers, so you really want to get that clean. They get pressed in place with epoxy, and then this giant sticker that's printed on clear vinyl just gets stuck over the top. So this one-off playfield probably only cost me about $400, but at the end of the day, it was pretty close to a production-quality-looking playfield. So if your concern is being able to get something nice that looks great for a playfield and that's holding you back, there's these steps that you can do to get there. The other question I get all the time is, how did you make your ramps? And that's been a problem for a lot of people. I found, again, through networking, you can get a lot of stuff done. Again, Greg Butcher really helped me out here with Extreme Pinball. He was able to make 1.5-inch MDF cut to size based on my, again, CAD specs for my ramps. And then I networked with a company in the Twin Cities to do the vacuum thermoforming for me. So for about $600, I was able to get 6 sets of ramps vacuum formed. The big problem is getting them cut out. To program their CNC, they wanted a lot of money to do that. I didn't really want to spend that much money. So I took the original vacuum forms that were right here, and then, again, just with a simple bandsaw, cut them all to shape by hand. And I urge you guys to stop by and play Wooly this afternoon and just look at the quality. If you have patience, you can really get some great stuff without spending a whole ton of money. Now, when we move into production on Wrath of Olympus, we'll be spending the money to get actual aluminum tools, high polish, so we get those ultra-clean, ultra-clear gloss ramps. And the other thing is just really looking around online for parts. Most of what goes into a pinball machine is all readily available other than your custom toys and custom mechs. But Pinball Life has, in my opinion, probably the second best selection, but they probably have the best prices. Marco Specialties has just a ton of pinball stuff that you can buy. McMaster Car, that is a great, great source for all your basic wood, metal, all the trim stuff that you need to cut to size, hardware like screws, fasteners. I bet you can buy a vacuum cleaner on McMasterCar.com. They sell everything. Bay Area Amusements is another one that has some pretty good selection. And I use DigiKey all the time for my electronic components. And there's a company called Shapeways, which is great for doing 3D printing as well. I personally happen to have access to a 3D printer, so I didn't need to use them, but there's a few companies online that if you create those 3D models, you can get them printed off affordably. And the other thing is, I found on eBay, you can get a whole ton of these populated playfields that people are almost ready to just junk, and it's too bad they're getting ready to do that. For $50 to $100, you can get a playfield with probably two-thirds of the mechs you're going to need. And if you got the time and patience to clean them, you can reuse those in your own design. And it comes in really handy, too, on the ball guides. So on our first Wrath of Olympus build, every single ball guide on there I was able to use from one of these old, junky playfields that people are just going to throw away. You either find one that's just a little longer than you need and you cut it to size, or there's ways that you can blend them together. But it's a great way that you can get your metal work done without having to spend a lot of money getting custom stuff laser cut or CNC'd. The other thing to really keep in mind is you're probably going to want to have a rotisserie if you don't. And there's a lot of ways that you can get a rotisserie. Pinside has a great forum thread called Post Your Rotisserie. There's a whole bunch of examples on how you can make one really cheap. Otherwise, you can go on eBay and buy a whole bunch too. But I found if you build your own, it's probably going to be better than most of the stuff you can buy online. And then the next thing is the brains of pinball. So for Wrath of Olympus, it was a no-brainer for us to go with P-Rock because of the huge community that Jerry's established on his forum for help. There's these incredible threads for talking through some of what I've talked about today to give you confidence in knowing how to set everything up between the computer, the P-Rock, the PD-16 boards, and all your electromechanical interfaces. And for our current build, we're actually using a cubby truck. So it's all self-controlled. It's just like a normal pinball machine. When you flip the switch on, everything turns on. And with that, I'm going to let Frank talk a little bit about the programming part.
Okay, so I guess about 15 months ago, I started programming Wrath of Olympus. I was very interested in the design. I love the theme. Scott seemed like a nice guy. I figured I'd help him out and, you know, help bring his vision to life. So where do you begin? You have to really ask yourself several things before you do begin with the programming. First of all, are you a logical thinking person? Do you have any skills for programming? It might seem, you know, silly to even ask that, but, you know, you have to know your own limitations. Like, my limitations are mechanical. So I would never build a pinball machine by myself, but I would certainly program it. And he wouldn't program a pinball machine, but he would certainly build it. So it was really nice synergy. And then you also have to look at, before you start programming a pinball machine, you need to know, well, what do I want this pinball machine to do? Do I want it to have color graphics, or do I want it to do a DMD? Do I want it to have ramps, or do I want it to be electromechanical? So those types of questions have to be answered first before you start programming your pinball machine, because it does matter, and it does give you different choices on what type of computer you're going to use, what kind of program you're going to do, what kind of skills you're going to need. If you say that you want color graphics and you want movies and you want audio, and do you have those skills, do you have the processing power to produce that type of content? So I asked myself when I talked to Scott, what was his what was his goal? How did he want to bring Wrath of Olympus to life? We had some conversations, and then I was pretty confident that I could, you know, make his dream a reality. So basically, I started programming Wrath of Olympus with the P-Rock boards. I had a regular Windows machine. And the P-Rock affords itself a fake mode where you can program and test it out in a DMD display and see how your programming is progressing, if it actually starts, if it can run the program. I'm over 1,000 miles away from Scott, so it was really important that I had the tools that I could test it myself, because I didn't have the hardware with me. So we spend a lot of time communicating back and forth on, you know, how do we want this how do we want the rules to be laid out? What type of modes do we want to have programmed? So then I got started on programming the main logic, I'll say. That would be your main flipping, your bonus, your score, your three balls. You know, the game starts, the game ends, those types of things. You have to get that out of the way first. You can't jump to the top of the mountain and start doing animations and such. And then it also has to have that same look and feel as the game. So Scott had this beautiful artwork that he created. I have some skills at animating and doing sound, but the animations would have to match his artwork. So he had to supply all the artwork, or I had to fill in the blanks for the artwork if we didn't have those particular images. So this is a shot of the basic programming. It's done in Python. You'll see some configuration files and a lamp show file, how we do lamp shows. These would be the art files that Scott gave me. So Scott will create some artwork in Photoshop, and I'll decide how many layers we need, or he'll decide how many layers we'll need, how we want the animation to happen. I'll export those images and animate them in a different program, try to determine what type of overlays we want to use, if we want text, if we want numbers to be on top, if we want, you know, a progress bar, perhaps. So you have to do a lot of homework up front before you even start working on it. But then you can get to the point where you have your code base, and then you have your animations. I'll perhaps do animations for a whole week and do nothing but animations, because I'll get into the creative rhythm, bang out all the animations, and then I'll go back to the code. And then I'll start putting those animations into the code to see them bring the game into life. Then we talked about what type of sound effects that we wanted in the game, what kind of music, and then what type of tools do we need to produce new music. Do we need some additional help? So, you know, I got pretty good at using Audacity to manipulate some of the music that we had from the virtual pin, and then adding new music and adding new sound effects, having new people record voices for me so that I could manipulate those voices and make them sound like the characters, to bring those characters to life, add additional characters to make the game more interesting and more fun. And then as we saw the game progress, we had some more ideas where we wanted to take the game. We want it to be more of a quest, something interesting that you'll continue to try to strive deeper and deeper into the game, so that every time you play it, you might uncover something new in the game. So I think that's about where we're at. We completed the code for Expo. We have a special Expo edition of the code running on the game, and we welcome you to come by and try it.
So once you get your cabinet built, your playfield done, you got some software running, the next step is kind of getting it all together. And what I like to do on this last build was I kept one of the whitewoods that I had made extra just for doing test fitting of the ball guides ahead of time. So you don't want to scratch up your overlay. You want to be able to make sure you can test fit into your cabinet. Little things like making sure your plunger rod lines up properly with the ball could be a major pain in the butt if you're trying to deal with something that you don't want to get ruined. But dealing with just a simple whitewood that can get scratched to heck and you don't worry about it really makes your job easier. Wiring, again, using a rotisserie is going to save your grace. It's amazing how many pounds of wire go into a pinball machine. I wish I knew, but it's got to be like 50 pounds by the time you get everything run through. Getting everything mounted on the backside. I personally like getting all my coils, the insert lamps and the sockets, everything that needs to get wired, I wanted to have mounted first so I could try to plan ahead on where I wanted to route the wires. In a Stern pinball machine, they've got 6-7 people threading wire all over the place, developing their special wiring harnesses. Well, when you're just building one to start, you're not going to spend that much time trying to figure out one specific wiring harness for your game. You just want to get it wired up. So being able to get everything laid out ahead of time on your playfield is a good way to kind of visually start seeing how you want to run your wire. And then after you get that done, it's flip the playfield over and start putting everything else on top. Because for our build, we didn't want to damage any of the playfield by accident. So we wanted to have as much built before we really started working on the top side. This is just another shot of trying to be strategic in the way you wire. Really thinking about that ahead of time is very important. On the first build we did, I kind of left a little loose. With the switch matrix and the lamp matrix, you got stuff going all over the place, and making sure you get your terminals together is difficult. But I found on the second build, using these little terminal blocks to understand where everything is going really helped me route my wires. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with terminal blocks, but they work really well. The first Woolly was kind of a bird's nest of wire nuts, but going this route was able to clean things up quite a bit. And again, having a dog partner helps when you get frustrated and you sit down and relax and then come back to the game. The other thing I found really important that helped is if you leave like 3 feet of wire, it's a lot to run and it gets heavy. But the nice thing is you can pull your play field out of the cabinet, stick it on a rotisserie, spin it around, fix stuff up, and still have it all connected inside. So you don't have to keep going in and removing connectors over and over again. I don't like doing that on any of my home games just because I don't like stressing the boards any more than I have to. But leaving a little bit of extra wire was really helpful in troubleshooting and just doing the development. And again, just to talk about getting the thing running, there are a whole bunch of awesome tutorials on the pinballcontrollers.com. And this particular one was a guy by Joe Shabadoo. And when I read through that, it was so detailed on how to get everything we've been talking about together today. It just gave me the confidence to know that, yes, this is something I know I can do. I know I can get this game put together, and I can get flippers going. It's not going to be coded, but at least I know I can have a flipping whitewood. And about that time, Frank came on board and just took it to that next level where he really breathed life into it. But at least through this forum, it was step-by-step on everything I needed to know that I could have a flipping pinball machine. And that was the number one goal I had, is if I can at least get this thing flipping, I'm going to be happy. Again, lots of detail, lots of pictures, lots of how-to. If you're good at all at problem-solving and understanding process, you can do this. So again, just closing notes. One of the things I also recommend is to tear down and rebuild a pinball machine. If you've got one that needs work or needs cleaning, tear it down, clean it up. Understand how it's put together, because almost every machine is built the same unless it's a P3. We're all using the same lamp matrix style, same switch matrix. They're all using coils. Nothing's changed in the last 50 years, really. So understanding how current pinball machines work is going to really help you understand how yours is going to work. It's also going to help you understand, okay, I didn't realize a flipper assembly is this big. They're like that big. How do you get that underneath the play field? Secondly, learn from the experts. You know, there's no need to reinvent the wheel unless you're, you know, taken to a whole another level. There's a lot of things that you can get from a current pinball machine by looking at their shot maps and understanding why they're doing something to create the right effect. And changing that, you'll find, has a lot of effects on the way the ball travels. And again, depending on how far you want to take your project, be prepared to spend a lot of time, and quality is all going to be dependent on the amount of money you spend. For the two different Woolly builds we have, we probably have about $10,000 of our cash into those two models. And because of that, we have a really high-end looking custom pinball machine, in my opinion. Doesn't mean you need to spend $10,000, but to give you an idea, to get a machine that looks like Wrath of Olympus, be prepared to spend $5,000 to $6,000 to make your game. And the bigger thing, in my opinion, again, is the hours. You know, Frank has probably 1,500 hours plus of coding between the artwork, the mechanical, the electrical, the assembly, everything. I probably have close to 3,000 hours into this project. So it's been a labor of love for 2.5 years, many hours every day. But if you're passionate, again, it's all worth it. And I can't stress it enough that you can network, and you'll find so many people out there that are going to be willing to help you. I don't know if I just got lucky through this process or not, or maybe it's because I've got good people skills, but I don't think that's the case. But I found so many people that have been so willing to give me advice, give me information, help me out with bugs, and step up like Frank did and just do a wonderful job coding. And just in closing, for those of you that don't know, we have actually secured Spooky Pinball to manufacture Wrath of Olympus for us. So if you guys haven't played, come to the expo, the exhibit hall, and play the game. We will be selling them. We're looking to get 100 pre-orders in. When I say pre-orders, I really mean deposits, because once we get 100 buyers, we're going to be building these. We've got everything we need to start basically manufacturing next spring. So if you have any questions or comments, feel free to email me at scott@riotpinball.com. And right now, I guess anybody has any questions on the build or your own projects, feel free to ask me right now. Yes, sir.
It seems like, is most of the software that you use to put it together free, like free available when you talk about gaming on desk and all that stuff?
Yeah, well, a lot of it is, and that's kind of what I wanted to stress. Some of the tools I used were a little higher end, like the CAD, and I have Photoshop. Obviously, those are expensive licenses, but there are free 3D modeler programs out there that will get you the exact same files that you need to get printed. GIMP is a great program for doing the 2D stuff that'll export the exact files that Extreme Pinball needs to cut your play field. Audacity is free for doing your audio sampling. All the software, the Python structure, I assume, is free. So, yeah, all the tools you need to make a high-end, quality-looking pinball machine are out there for free if you look hard enough and download them and learn to use them. Yes?
How close to reality was with your vision of the design? Can you just elaborate on things that, hey, this didn't really work out in the virtual world as well as I wanted to? Can you discuss how that and what you did to solve those problems?
Sure. The question was about the virtual design and how that related to the real design from problems and shot perspective.
Just game design. Oh. Your game design that you envisioned matched actually in the virtual thing, the physical thing, right? I mean, there's all sorts of physical, yes, mechanical properties.
How well did it match? I think it matched really well. It's hard to make a complete apples-to-apples comparison because I did make some changes. One of the things that I changed is the virtual one. I had two pop bumpers right underneath the upper play field. That was something I realized I couldn't do because I needed to run flipper assemblies through there. And we also changed it from a standard body to a wide body. Added another loop over in the right corner. But the other shots from a feel perspective and flow perspective, I was really amazed at how similar they correlated with the visual pinball design. I think the biggest difference that I noticed is the ball energy in the digital version seems to not dissipate like it does in the real one. So it tends to fly through the orbits faster. Some of the shots that I think were clean in the visual pinball version, we needed to do a lot more refinement in the real version to get that same flow. I think that the energy in the visual pinball, the ball might be bouncing through those pathways, but it still looks like it's flowing through smooth and fast. But when you get to the real one, a lot of those little nuances tend to show up. So we spent a lot of time trying to fine-tune some of that stuff. So I guess the bottom line is you can get really close, and you can understand, most importantly, if you have a fun layout and if you like the layout and how the shots flow, but there's still a lot of work after that point to get it to be smooth and to get that feel that you're looking for from a real pinball machine. How many people here are thinking about starting a project of their own? Or okay. What are you guys' biggest fears about starting? Or what's holding you back?
Time?
Okay, yeah, that's a big one.
The original theme and not taking it for like a movie or a trademark, trying to get the rights if you were passionate about a certain movie.
That's great you're thinking about that ahead of time. That was something I spent a lot of time before I even picked Wrath of Olympus as a theme. It's like, okay, I'm going to put 5,000 hours into this. I really want to have something that, if people like it and I have a chance to make it, that I can do that without having to worry about contacting Fox to get a license or not. And also finding a theme that you really enjoy, but also I spent a lot of time thinking about what other people might want to get. And I thought the Greek gods was kind of universal and a good one to pick, especially since it was probably Medusa was the last pinball machine I can think of that had a Greek theme associated with it. So,
everything running on a standard PC motherboard, is that how this is laid out?
Yep. Well, sort of. It's a cubby truck, and I guess freight guitar.
So, depending on the animations and the sound and the CPU processing power that you need for your project, you might need a larger computer, or you might be able to reduce it to a smaller computer. So some people have successfully made custom pinballs with a Raspberry Pi as the processing center. Okay, the Raspberry Pi wouldn't run Wrath of Olympus, so we had to go to something larger. So I tried several models and scaled it back to the point where this will run Wrath of Olympus well. The next model will not. So that was a lot of trial and error, a lot of trying to get it to run the code efficiently and the animations, and to build in, if you decide to go to another level, different sound, more sound, higher quality animation, do I have that processing power? So this particular embedded processor board was able to handle it.
And then, so how the, what method do you use to talk to the boards that control the solenoids and things? Is that a standard computer type of bus or?
Right, so we run a Linux processor to run the computer, Linux operating system to run the computer, and then we have Python running on top of that and a framework running on top of that called PyProc Game. And, you know, there's some other things running. Then that combined together will then talk to the hardware and the lamps and the flashers.
Is that like through a USB connection or?
Yeah, it's just a USB connection to the PROC.
To the main PROC, right.
And the PROC.
You know, I spent a lot of time restoring 30 or 40 year old electronics, and I'm just wondering, you know, with motherboards and PC stuff changing all the time, is there a standard interface that's going to be supported 10 years from now? The process of the
Completely
different.
Yeah, it's just USB. Okay. Yep. Jerry did a great job designing the PROC to be as forward compatible as possible. Well, good luck to everybody that has their own projects, and we wouldn't be here today without this community. So if you guys have any questions or anything, you know, feel free to email me, scott@riotpinball.com. I'm more than happy to help you guys out and give you advice or tell you the vendors I used, or if you have any other specific questions about today that you didn't want to ask, feel free to email me, and I'd be more than happy to help you guys out.